Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sacred Companions, The Gift of Spiritual Friendship and Direction, by David G. Benner. Foreword by Larry Crabb. Narrated by George W. Saris. Foreword. When I'm still, I sometimes can feel a gentle breeze blowing softly into my soul. Others are reporting the same experience. I am excited. For this stubborn melancholic to sense excitement stirring, something supernatural must be going on. I believe it is. In my nearly 50 years of living as a Christian, I have never seen the soul's thirst for God more talked about, more recognized as a vital motivation in the human personality, or more strongly experienced as a consuming passion. Perhaps a revolution is underway. A revolution of the spirit that is about to shift our core energies away from arranging life to make it as satisfying as possible to drawing near to God. The spiritual climate is ripe. Jesus seekers across the world are being prepared to abandon the old way of the written code for the new way of the spirit. Paul told us long ago, we've been freed by the gospel to live a new way. But we've not known what it is or how to do it. But now, living on this fallen planet in these jars of clay has disillusioned us to the point where maybe we're willing to give up trying to do what's right so that life will work. It just isn't happening, at least not reliably. No amount of effort, including good Christian effort, makes life always go as we want. Even when it does, when things do go our way, our souls at best are half-filled. Something that was missing when blessings were absent remains missing in their presence. More people are open as never before to letting painful hardships and empty pleasures drive us to chasing after God's own heart, to doing whatever it takes to know God and to see Christ formed in us. We're beginning to wonder what else really matters. In my judgment, nothing is more needed in advancing this revolution than making the idea of spiritual direction more biblically rooted and clearly understandable, insofar as mystery can be understood, and making the wise practice of spiritual direction more valued and common. In the past year alone, I have read a couple of dozen books on this topic. I'm grateful for them all. But one book stands above the others as simple enough to be profound, illustrative enough to demystify the process while allowing it to remain supernatural, and passionate enough to steer us away from a merely academic approach to spiritual direction. That book, of course, is the one you're listening to now. I've known David Benner for many years, both by reputation and writing. From a distance, I have long respected Dr. Benner as a perceptive thinker and a seriously Christian psychologist in every sense of the word. But now I know David. In the past year, he and I have become friends. Our hearts are meeting as we realize we are walking a similar journey. My respect has deepened, and an experience of fellowship in the gospel has begun. From knowing him, I could have endorsed this book without even reading it, but I have read it several times, and I assigned it as the lead book in the first class I ever taught on spiritual direction. I think it's that good. Listen to it carefully. Listen to it several times. Listen to it with a notepad beside you and a pen poised to record your thoughts and impressions. If you do, by the time you finish, I am quite certain at least three things will happen. One, you'll be more aware of your thirst to know God. Two, you'll pray earnestly for someone to provide you with spiritual direction. And three, you'll ask God for the privilege of offering it to others. Listeners of this book by David Brenner will, I predict, feel the fresh wind of the Spirit blowing into and through their souls. They will be better equipped to join the revolution of leaving the old way behind, the way of living comfortably in this world. And they will more deeply yearn to live the new way of seeking God and living for Him in this disappointing world, until they wake up in the next one, where eternal satisfaction is guaranteed. Larry Crabb. Preface: Companions on the Spiritual Journey. Of all the social changes in the last several decades, nothing has surprised me more than the recent rise of interest in spirituality. For many in Western societies, a hunger for the sacred has emerged out of the bankruptcy of materialism and secularism. And for many in the church, a longing for a deep encounter with God has arisen out of the arid soil of knowing about God, but having little personal, experiential knowing of Him. My world is full of people on a spiritual journey. Cradle Roman Catholics rediscovering their church and faith, former atheists visiting Aboriginal healing circles, Christians practicing Buddhist meditation, New Age seekers pursuing encounters with the sacred, evangelicals discovering mysticism, Roman Catholics discovering Bible study and intercessory prayer, and Protestants discovering liturgy and the sacraments. Lunch hours in the public mental health clinic where I work used to be filled with the usual topics of conversation: gossip, weekend activities and plans, sports and entertainment. Now, the number one topic is often spirituality. The number two remains clinic gossip. People seem to be bursting to tell anyone who will listen about their spiritual quest. They long to share their journey with others. They want people who not only will listen to them, but can relate to their story because they are on a spiritual journey of their own. Spirituality means different things to these people, but a common component of those diverse meanings is the notion of being connected. These people all long to be connected to God, however he, she, it is understood, to others, to themselves, and often to the earth. The hunger for connection is one of the most fundamental desires of the human heart. We are like immigrants in a new land, with no family or friends and no sense of place. We seem to have lost our mooring, or perhaps we have lost some part of ourselves. Like pieces of a puzzle seeking their adjoining pieces, we long for connections that will assure us that we belong. But it is not just connections in general that we seek. In the core of our being, we yearn for intimacy. We want people to share our lives. We want soul friends. We were never intended to make the life pilgrimage alone, and attempting to make the spiritual journey on our own is particularly hazardous. Paradoxically, however, what we most deeply long for, we also fear. How else can we explain our reluctance to be genuinely known by those with whom we are most intimate? Often it seems that what we want is the fruit of companionship without the demands of genuine intimacy. Yet something within us remains dissatisfied with the safe but superficial relationships we experience. Our souls ache for a place of deep encounter with others. Our fears may partially mask this ache, but it won't go away. We want companions for the journey, companions with whom we can share our soul and our journey. Defining our terms. I have mentioned the ambiguity of the term spirituality, but now I have introduced another equally ambiguous term: soul. Because these two concepts are foundational to what I will be developing in the rest of the book, it is important that I clarify what I mean by these terms. The soul that interests me in these chapters is not the technical concept of the theologian or philosopher. My use of the term is more metaphorical. I use it to refer to persons in their depths and totality, with particular emphasis on their inner life. This, it seems to me, is comparable to Jesus' use of the term. For example, when he spoke of his souls being crushed with sorrow, Matthew chapter 26, verse 38, he was speaking of his inner world of feelings and hope. The same is true when he promised rest for the souls of those who come to him. Matthew chapter 11, verse 29. The soul rest that Jesus offers touches the whole of our being, physical, spiritual, and psychological, but is particularly focused on our inner self. A soul friendship is therefore a relationship to which I bring my whole self, especially my inner self. And the care that I offer for the other person in a soul friendship is a care for his or her whole self, especially the inner self. Soul friends seek to safeguard each other's uniqueness and nurture the growth of each other's inner self. They seek to meet each other as whole people and help each other become whole people. They offer each other the sacred gift of accompaniment on the human journey. What, then, does the concept of spirituality add to this? I use the term spirituality to refer to a person's awareness of and response to the divine. On the basis of this, I would argue that to be human is to be spiritual. Everybody has some awareness of God. We differ only in the degree of that awareness and the nature of the response we make to it. We all face the inescapable challenge of working out our existence in relation to God. That is our spirituality. That is what it means to be human. Christian spirituality is, of course, something much more specific. Christian spirituality involves working out our existence within the context of the Christian faith and community. More precisely, it is the deep relationship with God that exists when the human spirit is grounded in God's spirit. Spirituality is not Christian if it is not centered in the spirit. Christian spirituality is our response to the spirit. He is the one who initiates and guides the journey for Christians. For Christians, the spiritual journey is at the core of the human journey. We believe that the ultimate fulfillment of our humanity is found in union with God through Christ. Nothing is therefore more important than discovering and actualizing the unique self in Christ that is my eternal destiny. This is the core of Christian spirituality. Spiritual friends. If you are making significant progress on the transformational journey of Christian spirituality, you have one or more friendships that support that journey. If you do not, you are not. It is that simple. Spiritual friends nurture the development of each other's soul. Their love for each other translates into a desire that the other settle for nothing less than becoming all that he or she was intended to be. What they offer each other in response to this desire is not a professional role, nor is it specialized expertise. Rather, it is the gift of themselves and their companionship on the transformational journey of Christian spirituality. Spiritual friends are soul friends. This means that they care for each other as whole people, not simply as spiritual beings. Soul friends become spiritual friends when they seek to help each other attend and respond to God. In what follows, I will generally refer to spiritual friends. I will, however, use the term soul friends when I wish to emphasize the basic aspects of caring for others in their depths and totality, and true friends when I wish to emphasize the ideal nature of these relationships. The potential for spiritual friendship lies undetected all around us, not just in our churches, but also in our homes, workplaces, and communities. Tragically, those who seek such friendships often fail to see the possibilities that already exist in their lives. They fail to see a spouse as a potential soulmate, instead seeing only a husband or wife or a partner in parenting. They miss the possibility of genuinely spiritual friendships with their children, understanding their role in terms of supervision and training, not accompaniment. Other people are judged ineligible because they do not seem to be like them. Friends, spouses, and family members all have opportunities to offer each other genuine companionship on the spiritual journey. While these forms of soul friendship differ in a number of ways from the more formal and structured relationship of spiritual direction, we shall see that they also share many qualities. Ideally, they also form the dynamic core of the church. Spiritual communities are, after all, simply networks of spiritual friendships. Spiritual direction. The second form of soul friendship that we shall examine is spiritual direction. Spiritual direction is more structured and less mutual than spiritual friendship. Often referred to by such terms as mentoring, discipleship, or spiritual guidance, these all describing slightly different but closely related forms of relationship. Spiritual direction has been recently discovered by large numbers of Protestants. But it is more appropriate to describe this rise of interest as a rediscovery than as a discovery. Spiritual direction is an ancient form of Christian soul care that goes back to the earliest days of the church. It has never really gone away. It is just that large sectors of the Christian church have forgotten their own heritage. In its classical form, spiritual direction is a one-on-one relationship organized around prayer and conversation directed toward deepening intimacy with God. As we shall hear, spiritual directors are not experts, nor do they direct. They do not follow a standardized curriculum or implement a prepackaged program. Rather, they journey with others who, like themselves, are committed to the process of spiritual transformation in Christ. And most important, they seek to help those with whom they journey discern the presence and leading of the Spirit of God, the one Jesus sent as our true spiritual director. Sacred companions. To describe spiritual directors and friends as sacred companions is to note the way they help us become more aware of the presence of the sacred. The supreme gift that anyone can give another is to help that person live life more aware of the presence of God. Sacred companions help us remember that this is our Father's world. They help us hear His voice, be aware of His presence, and see His footprints as we walk through life. They accompany us on a journey that is made sacred not by their presence, but by the presence of God. In doing so, they make the journey sacred. In doing so, they help us live with a keener awareness of the sacred. Speaking personally. Before embarking on an exploration of these forms of spiritual companionship, I would like to say a word about how I, a clinical psychologist, happen to be writing a book on spiritual direction and friendship. While I have long been interested in the interaction of the psychological and spiritual dimensions of the soul, until recently, the focus of my work and writing has been more psychological than spiritual. Most of my previous books were on counseling or psychotherapy. While they all focus on spiritual considerations as important dimensions of such clinical activities, they are primarily addressed to professionals. I am in no way turning my back on counseling or my professional discipline of clinical psychology. I remain deeply impressed by the value of psychology, not simply as a technology of change, but as an aid to understanding the dynamics of the soul. I also remain deeply committed to training counselors and psychotherapists, and to providing therapeutic services myself. However, I am concerned about the predominantly therapeutic face of soul care in our culture's church and society. We have entrusted the care of the inner life of persons to experts who understand their role primarily in problem-solving and therapeutic terms. But therapeutic soul care should not be the model of Christian soul care, nor should clinically trained professionals be relied on to provide the bulk of such care. While counselors and therapists have an important role to play in restoring wholeness that has been lost, spiritual friends and directors have an equally important role in helping others become all they were intended to be. It is my hope that the predominantly therapeutic face of contemporary Christian soul care will be balanced by an increasingly spiritual one as more Christians offer themselves in relationships of sacred companionship. The care of souls is much too important to be left to clinical professionals. The passions of an amateur. I write about spiritual friendship and direction as an amateur, not as a professional. I hold no formal credentials in these areas, nor do I make any pretense of expertise. What I know about spiritual friendship and direction comes first and foremost from the experience of journeying with my own spiritual friends. I have also been richly blessed by my exposure to spiritual direction through several personal experiences of receiving it, through reading and a modest amount of training, and by a number of years of offering it to others. These experiences have not made me an expert. They have, however, fueled my passion for spiritual companionship. It is on that basis that I write this book. Amateurs do what they do out of passion. This precisely describes my feelings about the enormous value of the gift of spiritual friendship and direction. In recent years, the church has been tragically marginalized as a provider of soul care. The rise of the therapeutic culture dominating the West in the last century led to an artificial separation of the psychological and spiritual aspects of persons. The acceptance of this distinction resulted in the churches being judged relevant to only the spiritual part of persons. I feel very concerned about this development and have committed 2 decades of work to reversing it. If the church is to be restored to its rightful place of relevance to and preeminence in supporting the care and cure of souls, we must equip and encourage people to offer themselves to others in relationships of soul friendship and spiritual companionship. This will continue to include counselors, and it will require many more well-trained spiritual directors. But it will also require parents, spouses, and friends who refuse to settle for anything less than the genuine spiritual friendships for which they themselves long. It also needs elders, small group leaders, and others who understand how to structure relationships in ways that best nurture spiritual growth. My commitment to assist in these efforts has been the motivation for this book. I offer this book with a prayer that it may be used by God to raise up an army of people ready to accompany others on the spiritual journey. In other words, I want it to make a difference. To that end, I have included questions for reflection and discussion at the end of each chapter. Simply reading a book is often insufficient to produce changes in behavior. Prayerful reflection and discussion with others always help unpack the implications of what we read and prepare for any changes that the Spirit may suggest. It is my hope, then, that these opportunities for reflection will be useful to individuals and groups who listen to what follows. First Sunday of Lent, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Part 1. Spiritual Friendship. 1. The Transformational Journey. I have always enjoyed travel. Intellectually and spiritually, I have also always been on a quest, always restless and always seeking. While recently reading a book about spiritual styles, I was struck to see that it described people within the contemplative style, which fits me pretty well, as on an endless spiritual pilgrimage. It also described me exactly when it identified the attraction of such people to the image of the journey as a metaphor for life. Perhaps it is not surprising, then, that I framed this book on spiritual friendship in terms of accompaniment on a journey. However, to describe spirituality in terms of a journey is to employ a metaphor that connects us solidly with the biblical account of the nature of Christian faith. Both Old and New Testaments frequently present faith as a response to a call to a journey of following and trusting God as He leads us on the adventure He has planned for us. Consider, for example, Abraham. God asked Abraham to leave his country and his relatives and go to a land that he would subsequently be shown. Logically, this made no sense. People with families and responsibilities do not generally set forth into an unknown wilderness on the prompting of their God, particularly without knowing where they are heading. But Abraham did exactly that. He agreed to follow his God on a journey that would leave him and the world forever changed. And remember the journey of the children of Israel as they followed God out of Egypt and into the wilderness. Tracing their route throughout the 40 years of wandering in what is now Saudi Arabia would suggest that they were lost. But they were precisely where they were supposed to be, following God around the wilderness until they underwent the desired character transformation. They thought their call was simply a deliverance from Egypt to the promised land of milk and honey. But while God did indeed have in mind their deliverance, his plan was for deliverance from much more than the Egyptians. God had in mind their deliverance from themselves. They were called to a journey of transformation, not simply to another country in which to live. Finally, also remember the call Jesus issued to his disciples. To Simon and Andrew, it was simply, "Follow me, and I will make you fish for people." Mark chapter 1, verse 17, New Revised Standard Version. To Levi, it was an even terser, "Follow me." Mark chapter 2, verse 14. Again, the call was to a journey, not to a destination. And again, it was a call to a journey that would leave them forever changed. The essence of Christian spirituality is following Christ on a journey of personal transformation. The distant land to which we are called is not heaven, nor is it some external physical place. The distant land is the new creature into which Christ wishes to fashion us, the whole and holy person that finds his or her uniqueness, identity, and calling in Christ. Spiritual friends accompany each other on that journey. The soul's journey in Christian spirituality is a journey of becoming, not simply of doing or even being. This is why it gives priority to the inner self. The transformation that occurs in Christian spirituality moves from the inside out. This is the significance of Christ's constant emphasis on the heart. Changes in our behavior are important, but our motives for what we do are even more important. Recall how Jesus structures the Sermon on the Mount with a formula, "You have heard how it was said, but I say this to you." See Matthew chapters 5 through 7. What is the higher standard that is set by Christ? It is the state of the heart. Motives count. Private thoughts count. The inner self counts, and in fact is the primary focus of the personal transformation that Jesus calls conversion. The route for the journey. As with the journey Abraham was asked to undertake, it is impossible to specify precisely the route that has to be followed in a soul's journey of transformation. This is because, rather than following a map, in this journey we follow a person, Jesus. Jesus does not tell us where to go. He simply asks us to follow him. The Christian spiritual journey requires us to overcome the temptation to follow other people rather than Jesus himself. If we are blessed, we will have experiences of seeing him in spiritual friends or other Christians who share our journey. In these circumstances, it is sometimes tempting to think that following them is following Jesus. But it is not. Spiritual friends help us most when they make clear that their job is to point the way, not to lead the way. And the way to which they should point is Jesus. An equally important temptation for those seeking to offer spiritual friendship is to assume that one's own route is best for others. How easy it is to think that everyone should meet God in the way and places that I do. How easily I imagine that everyone should follow the same path of prayer, devotion, or service as I have followed. The task of spiritual friends is to help us discern the presence, will, and leading of the Spirit of God, Spiritual friends provide a serious disservice when they authoritatively dictate the specific.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?